From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Sitting in for Tony is today's host, Jody Heiss.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, the Senior Vice President here at the Family Research Council and President of FRC Action. We have got a lot coming your way. Let me give you some of the highlights. This week, specifically tomorrow, marks the third anniversary of the fall of Kabul. That's when the Taliban re-seized control of Afghanistan following the Biden administration's disastrous withdrawal.
Let me just say that to date, no country has publicly announced that it recognizes the Taliban as the government of Afghanistan, and we continue to, in close coordination with allies and partners, call on the Taliban that they need to substantially improve their human rights record before any normalizations of relations.
Well, that was the State Department's principal deputy spokesman, Vedant Patel, earlier today, attempting to be diplomatic, but he was attempting to explain what a terrorist group needs to do to gain recognition. Well, friends, I can tell you, as a member of Congress during that time 3 years ago, our office worked diligently throughout that chaotic period to help many who, quite frankly, would have been killed by the Taliban. And I'm going to be joined by Andrew Bunnell, who is a Georgia ministry leader with an incredible story. He was one that our office and others worked with directly. Just an incredible story. He will be joining me here in just a few moments to talk about the rescue attempts underground to specifically rescue Christians in Afghanistan. You'll want to be sure to hear that. And this week, Rebecca LeBrance, she's the Colorado bed and breakfast operator who has come to be known as the January 6th praying grandma. Well, she has been sentenced to 6 months of home confinement, and she has been fined more than $100,000 simply for entering the U.S. Capitol for about 10 minutes during the January 6th riot. Her attorney, John Pierce, who is the founder of the National Constitutional Law Union, will be joining me to discuss how the federal government has cracked down even on those who peacefully gathered at the Capitol in 2021. And speaking of two-tiered system of justice, after riots took place in England following the stabbing murder of three young girls at a dance event, UK authorities have begun sending citizens to prison for social media posts commenting on that situation.
In relation to online and social media, the first thing I'd say is this is not a law-free zone. And I think that's clear from the prosecutions and sentencing. Today we're due sentencing for online behaviour. That's a reminder to everyone that whether you're directly involved or whether you're remotely involved, you're culpable and you will be put before the courts if you've broken the law.
Well, that was UK Prime Minister Starmer last week at the as the first rioters were charged in court when they appeared in court. And all this, folks, I want you to underscore that this is about social media posts and people going to prison. And it's not just happening in the UK. We'll share more about that a little bit later with Peter McElhinney, who's the co-founder of Hearts of Oak, which is a UK-based freedom of speech alliance. He will be joining me from London to explain the situation there. And abortion activists in South Dakota are pushing a pro-abortion amendment to their state's constitution. That's not necessarily new. Some other states are doing that. But the situation in South Dakota is that this one is so radical that even Planned Parenthood has avoided supporting it. And Carolyn Woods, a spokesperson for the Life Defense Fund, will be joining me from the Mount Rushmore State to explain. And then Dr. Donna Harrison, CEO of American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, will also weigh in on the truth regarding the abortion industry's lies about ectopic pregnancies. Wow, friends, you just won't believe where all this is headed. We've got a lot coming your way. You don't want to miss a bit of it. Our website, TonyPerkins.com. Many, many, many valuable resources are available there for you, including archived programs and this one, if you happen to miss any portion of it. So keep that website, TonyPerkins.com, available and handy. All right, let's jump into the issues specific for today. Tomorrow, specifically, is going to mark the third anniversary of the fall of Kabul following the Biden administration's disastrous and chaotic withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan. And I've got to tell you, friends, when looking back on that August 3 years ago, I can tell you exactly where I was when it all broke. And for weeks and weeks on end, our office became one of the offices that was on the tip of the spear. And we certainly were not the only one, but we were one of the offices that took this head on. And unfortunately, I can say that many of those who were on the verge of being left behind or killed as the Biden administration abandoned them to the Taliban, the State Department was virtually non-existent. It was members of Congress, like my own staff. We started developing our own underground network and connections, working with anyone and everyone we possibly could. And joining me here in just a moment, Andrew Bunnell, one of those. Before I bring Andrew on, let me just share this. This was this took place Friday, August 20th, 3 years ago. Our office received this email. It talks about there was a group of 22 Christians. And actually, Andrew had contacted my pastor, who contacted me, and one thing after another started going. But listen to this. This group is in extreme danger. They've had to move locations to evade Taliban door-to-door searches in the last 24 hours. This group is on the evacuation list but cannot safely get to the airport due to the situation outside the gates. They are actively evading a manhunt presently and will be killed when found. And he was the communications go on and on and on. The next morning, early in the morning, this message comes in that the group has been found. Very sorry to message. This is from Andrew. Sorry to message so early. Just got a call. Group of Taliban from Herat is coming to Kabul for them, for this group. They have been exposed. A relative broke down under torture. They think that they have about 8 to 10 hours. All of them are together in one location, 22 in total. They're 15 minutes from the airport. They just need gate access from the military on site. And here we are, our job is to try to get that. Folks, and the next response from Jessica on our team is, oh, Lord, we are praying now. We're going to do everything we can. I tell you, I cannot relive 3 years ago without just getting so emotional. This is, relive it like it was yesterday. This was but one of so many groups like this. Andrew Bunnell, Christian leader in Georgia, who led so many rescue attempts and successfully underground believers in Afghanistan. Andrew, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Congressman, thank you. And first of all, it's good to see you again. And I can't believe it's been 3 years since those just tragic days.
Andrew, I can't either. I received these emails today, and I tell you, I just started breaking down. I was so emotional. I relive this as though it's happening live time right now. Andrew, share your story, how you found yourself in a position to help. Talk about the help that you received from those on the ground. Just tell us a little bit of your story with all of this.
Well, I'd love to. You know, this story, like so many stories of this nature, involves an extraordinary group of people that came from all over the world, literally, to do something that just needed to be done. The story itself goes back more than two decades, and it involves missionary work across Eastern Europe and Central Asia, and some people who had taken the decision to change their way of thinking about God, about faith, and had become Christians, coming from a different background. And in the course of that decision, some people had gone back to Afghanistan to work and do a number of things to support democracy, freedom of religion and belief, the rights of women, and to express themselves in the way that they wanted to, and did so very successfully for well over a decade. And then during that horrible August 3 years ago, as things began to fall apart, found themselves in extreme danger. And so it really was a case of personal connections, stepping up when there were no other resources available, when there was no other option. And it really was offices like yours that that did so much and worked so many hours, like so many others, and charities and businesses and people just working on their own time to find any possible avenue to help these people out.
I can tell you, we found the State Department was of no help. In fact, they were detrimental. They were obstructing so much of the work. What did this represent for you about the power of God to mobilize believers to work together? And we've only got a couple of minutes left here. So, but what did this represent to you?
Well, it's a story of God at work in the nations. And one of the things I think it's hard to see as a believer, as a person of faith in the world that we're in, is that we see things in the terms of tragedy. But God has an extraordinary way of working in darkness and bringing light. And I think this story is a story that continues to give light and will continue to do so for decades. So many people have found their way to a personal relationship with Jesus Christ through the events of August 2021 and to a moment of truth to see that we cannot always rely on the tools of man, but have to understand that God works differently. I will agree with you. It was tragic how difficult and how unresponsive it was to get anyone at the State Department. And I can't express enough how grateful we are to your office and so many other offices and senatorial offices. I have to mention Cindy Hyde Smith's office, who was an extraordinary help during that same weekend, working with you, working with her office, and so many others.
Well, and thank you. I mean, when we started hitting the roadblocks, we had to find others. You were one of the first that came about, and working together, developing an underground network there was just unbelievable. We've got just a few seconds. How many would you say have come to Christ through your ministry as a result of this, and just a number?
Well, through ours, quite a few. I think through all of the ministries, it's certainly in the tens of thousands.
Wow. Unbelievable. Thank you, Andrew Brunell. Incredible story. And thank you for coming on Washington Watch to share a bit about it. All right, friends, after the break, we've got a praying grandmother who's been fined over $100,000 and sentenced to home confinement for 10 minutes in the Capitol on January 6th. We'll discuss it after the break. Stay tuned.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable Word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, sagecon, to learn more. That's sagecon, sagecon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. So glad to have you on board with us. And I do want to say we actually have a picture of those 22 who were rescued, but for obvious reasons, unable to show it publicly. But the emotions of them being saved, and that was just the beginning of day after day, week after week. And again, I just want to express a deep thank you to Andrew Bunnell and his incredible work. What a hero. All right, this week, Rebecca Lavrenz, she's the Colorado bed and breakfast operator who probably most of you recognize her as being called the January 6th praying grandma. But she was sentenced to 6 months of home confinement and was fined $103,000 for entering the U.S. Capitol for about 10 minutes. During the January 6th riot. Folks, this is the largest misdemeanor fine in American history. And it comes after prosecutors initially were seeking 10 months of incarceration, followed by 12 months of supervised release. Unbelievable. Well, joining me now is her attorney, John Pierce. He's the founder of the National Constitutional Law Union. John, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you so much for coming on and filling in the details about this case.
Thank you so much, Jody, for having me on today.
All right, well, let's start by just briefly, can you describe what your client, Rebecca Lavrenz, what she actually did on January 6th?
Yeah, sure. It's very straightforward. She went to the Capitol to pray for the country. She's a great grandmother, bed and breakfast owner from Colorado. She saw what was happening to the country there in 2020 with the election and just the direction the country was going in. And she feels very strongly that, God is a part of this nation and the destiny of this nation. And she really, feels like and felt like we're on the wrong path when it comes to the country's relationship with God. So she wanted to go to D.C., to the Capitol, to pray for the country. And so that's what she did. She went there. She was always behind the barricades until they were opened up by the police and protesters were let in through some of the bike fencing. And then when the doors were opened and police let protesters into the building. And at all times, she was entirely peaceful. She was just literally just praying. She was inside for about 10 minutes and then, came back outside and left. And her thanks from the federal government for that was to be prosecuted for these four misdemeanors and taken to trial in D.C. federal court.
So what are they saying about her? I mean, what I've said, she is considered to be a big threat to the country.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, that's ludicrous. I have dozens and dozens of these January 6 cases. And, it's not a surprise to me, unfortunately, that the Department of Justice is, falsely casting her as some kind of threat to the republic. Nothing could be further from the truth. She's a delightful great-grandmother who loves God, loves Jesus. And, she was just there to pray. And she wasn't there to, get any election overturned. She was there to pray for everyone, for folks on both sides of the aisle, for people of all, creeds and races. And if Rebecca Lovrens is a threat to the republic, then, someone's living in an alternate reality.
Yeah. So your reaction to this, I mean, this is the largest misdemeanor fine in American history. What's your reaction?
Yeah, that's what we believe at this point. I haven't seen anything bigger. Look, it's outrageous. I mean, obviously, we're happy that she didn't get sentenced to any jail time. We fought very hard for that. But, the notion that you can get fined $103,000 for, for essentially glorified trespassing for misdemeanors, it's really an affront to the Constitution. It's going to prevent her from being able to really pursue her appeals the way that, she needs to be able to and the way we're planning to for her. So that's why we're trying to, continue to raise funds so that we can be able to pursue an appeal to the D.C. Circuit and then on to the Supreme Court as necessary. And you might have also seen that she has been prohibited from using the Internet or email for that 6-month period. And that's really going to prevent her from exercising her First Amendment right to, speak about the upcoming election. It's going to, again, prevent her from the ability to really raise funds to cover the fine and cover the appeal costs. And so that's why we're working very hard on that front on her behalf. But I've never heard anything like it in terms of the magnitude of this this fine.
Yeah, I haven't either. I mean, it's just unbelievable. From what I understand, the judge in this case actually appeared personally to be angry at your client and said that the whole fine was basically intended to send a message. Is that accurate? Am I understanding that correctly?
Judge Fruqui, who I have several cases in front of and, who I do have a great amount of respect for, he was definitely a little bit riled up during the sentencing. I think that, the system in D.C., Rebecca's a fighter. And so, she wanted to take this case to trial. We fought very, very hard for her. Some aspects of the system, I think, don't like when these January 6th defendants fight as hard as she fought. It was definitely a tense sentencing. And the judge did have some tough things to say to her, for sure.
Is this typical, what your client here has experienced in terms of being a pattern of the federal government prosecuting January 6th defendants more harshly than other rioters?
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely no question that, this is a perfect example of this two-tier system of justice that everyone is now finally talking about. You have all of these rioters back in the summer of 2020 in Portland and Minneapolis and everywhere else that caused, billions of dollars of damages and, many, many people dead and wounded. They essentially were not punished. They were charged in a much lighter fashion. A lot of those charges were dropped. Unfortunately, we're in a time where we have a very weaponized justice system, and January 6th is the perfect example of that.
So real quickly, what's next? The appeal takes place, and you're expecting, is this eventually going to go to the Supreme Court, you think?
I think it's got a real good chance because of the issues at play in this case, especially surrounding the First Amendment. The next step is we'll go to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, and we will appeal the conviction on the four misdemeanor counts, and we'll appeal the sentencing. And then depending on what happens there, if we need to, we will go absolutely to the U.S. Supreme Court. And I think the key thing, and I think this is, the case with, all
gotta
the
wrap it up here, John.
Yeah, I think, we got to get President Trump back there in office. And then, I'm optimistic he's going to pardon these folks.
John Pierce, National Constitutional Law Union, thank you so much. incredible work you've done. All right, friends, stay tuned. We've got a lot more Washington Watch coming your way, and you don't want to miss it. We'll be back in just a second.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Well, thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. Welcome back. I'm your host, Jody Heiss. Glad to have you. All right. Last month in Northwest England, three girls were murdered and at least eight others were injured in a ferocious knife attack that took place at a dance event. And then protests and riots began to break out all throughout England following these murders after rumors started circulating online that the suspect arrested, who is now 18-year-old son of parents who are originally from Rwanda. But the online communications was that he was an asylum seeker or a Muslim immigrant. And, of course, you just saw some footage of the riots, which includes a video of some violent clashes with counter-protesters. But all of these videos have gone viral on social media, and the British government has arrested and jailed citizens for their speech online. Incredible. Well, joining me now from London to discuss this is Peter McIlvena. He's the co-founder of Hearts of Oak. That's a freedom of speech alliance, and he works in the office of the UK's House of Lords. Peter, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks so much for staying up.
Not at all. It's good to be with you, Jody, and to share some negative news, I think, from the UK as you opened with.
Yeah, it really is. It's negative. It's pretty chilling information across the board. But since you're on the ground there in the UK, is there any more background or details that you'd like to share to further explain the details that maybe I left out in the intro?
No, this all kicked off, as I said, just over 2 weeks ago. The next day on the Tuesday, people gathered and a lot of anger seemed to spill over. And, of course, it spilled over initially because of misinformation, or so we're told it's misinformation, that this was an individual that came over illegally on a boat. We're told that's not the case, as you mentioned. And then we had riots all across the country, and the government have used this for an unprecedented clampdown. And the anger spilled from communities being left behind. It's exactly the same issue that you have in the US that we have all across Europe, which is mass immigration and how it's decimated and destroyed communities and left many individuals behind. They put a huge strain on many of our resources. So there's a lot of anger that boiled over. So rioting, looting is never acceptable. 100% that is not correct. but you have to understand why this is happening and address that. So instead of understanding what's happening, the police have gone in and arrested just under, I think, 1,000 people. I've seen it's over. Many of them arrested for Facebook posts. Some of them arrested for violent conduct, and that is completely acceptable. If you smash a shop, if you burn a car, then you must suffer the punishment. But the government have now said that they're introducing, without any legislation, they're just announcing that it's 10 years, up to 10 years in jail, up to 10 years, for participation in these riots. And participation means many people have been arrested for simply walking past. They were in the vicinity, weren't involved in it. Many other people have been arrested for Facebook and Twitter posts. We've had someone arrested 2 days ago for, I think it was 2 months, for posting on Facebook. We've had many others arrested and charged. We've had someone charged for shouting at a policeman, gesticulating and shouting, so waving your arms around, raising your voice. That was 26 months in jail for that. And yet we have the government releasing rapists early and releasing murderers early. We had one case 5-6 days ago. A man who committed a murder was released after 6 months, simply to free up prison places for all the extremist, hard right, whatever the government tag us as. And instead of understanding the underlying concern, the government have gone in with a Stasi-like approach, a clampdown that I've certainly never seen in my time, except in Northern Ireland when we hit the Troubles. But they've gone in, smashed in people's doors, arrested people. And there was a chilling post from one of the police officers a couple of days ago, within 1.5 minute video that the police put out, 4 times the police officer said, "We are coming for you." Very sinister, very concerning.
Absolutely. And not only that, but the head of the London's Metropolitan Police Service has issued a warning not only to citizens of the UK, but citizens of America who have been putting up some posts as well. And they, I mean, basically said what you just said, that they're coming after even Americans to extradite some of them. They said, "We are coming after you, period." This is astounding.
It is. And this all boils down to, this is a new government, Labour government on the left, far left government, have waited 14 years to get into power. They've got in, then there was a honeymoon period. Suddenly, these riots kick off. There is fear in the government that this will destabilise the government. So they go into full lockdown, full totalitarian procedures to shut down this. They've also threatened foreign nationals. So yes, you're right, Jody. Elon Musk is probably top of their list, because Elon Musk is basically the opposition in the UK. And as much as I disagree with Elon on many issues, actually what he's done with Twitter and how he's held the UK government to account is astounding, because we don't have an opposition. And it is Elon Musk who is the opposition to our far left government. And the government have said they will look at online cases, and if there's a need to extradite people to the country to face trial, they will do so. So I assume Elon, and maybe anyone else, because he was warned by the government, if you repost a video, you're liable to be arrested and charged and sentenced for tweeting. Wow. What did he do? He kept retweeting nonstop. That's the approach I like, and it's that fight back that we need to see us through this totalitarian lockdown regime.
Thank you, Peter McIlvena, co-founder of Hearts of Oak. Unbelievable story. We'll certainly be keeping a pulse on that. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for staying up. All right, much more to cover after the break. Pro-abortion activists in full swing in South Dakota. We'll bring that story your way in just a moment.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Jody Heiss, and an honor to be with you today. All right, just a reminder, we do have a petition that we intend to get to both President Biden and to all the presidential candidates. It's a petition urging them to support Israel and to find out where they stand on the issue of supporting Israel. And we would ask you to help us communicate the importance of this issue by signing the petition yourself. You can do so one of two ways. Either go to our website, frcaction.org/support, or you can simply text the word support to 67742. And we sincerely ask for your help in that regard. I think this is a major issue, as we all know, and your voice will go a long way. And if by chance you or perhaps someone you know continues to be kind of scratching their head wondering, well, why should we be praying for Israel? Why should we be standing with Israel? Well, I'm glad you asked that question. We just happen to have a brand new resource available direct from Tony Perkins. It's called Why We Must Pray For and Stand with Israel. You can get a digital copy of this for any gift amount to FRC. And so we encourage you, go online, make a donation, and get this very important new resource. To learn more about it, you can text the word Israel to 67742. Okay, abortion activists, they're at it again. They've got their sights now set on the state of South Dakota, deceptively pushing what's called Amendment G. It's a revision to the state's constitution that will allow abortion up until birth, while removing health and safety measures for women. This is so outrageous, even Planned Parenthood, to this point at least, has not gotten on board. Joining me now to explain the deceptive practices behind Amendment G and what it will mean for South Dakota is Caroline Wood. She's a spokesperson for Life Defense Fund. Caroline, welcome to Washington Watch. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks for having me, Jody.
All right, so just tell us about Amendment G. What is this thing all about?
Yes, it's a radical abortion up to birth, as you just said, amendment that's going on our election this November 5th. It is very radical, and it does four specific things. Number one, it allows abortion up to all 9 months. Number two, you as a parent have no right to know whether your daughter's coerced, forced into an abortion. That right is completely gone. Number three, if you're a doctor or a nurse, you have no conscious protections with this. If the state says, hey, you have to have an abortion or give one, you no longer have to, or you no longer get to have any protections, which is terrible. And number three, it is horrendous that all health and safety protections. You don't have to have an abortion in a clean and safe environment. There's no inspections. There's no, you have to be a doctor to do this. So this is a very radical amendment, and it's something that we in South Dakota are not on board with.
Well, it's radical and it's dangerous. And it just strips away rights that, frankly, are guaranteed in our Constitution. Where in the world did this come from? What is the force behind it, the momentum behind it? How did this even get to be offered as a constitutional amendment?
Yes. Well, a group called Dakotans for Health, which is the furthest thing from health or safety, might I add, they ended up actually cheating and lying their way to getting enough petition signatures from South Dakotans to put this on the ballot. Now, let me explain what they actually did to get those petitions, and I'll give you a few examples. In South Dakota, election law says you have to have a circulator handout when you're asking for these petitions. They had none. You cannot leave a ballot unattended, a petition unattended. They did not do that. They lied and said it was a grocery tax or it was a pro-life measure, and people signed it. They said, oh, this is going to restore Roe v. Wade, you know, back to the 22 weeks that we had here beforehand. It does not do that. It does much more. So there's story after story, and actually I just talked to someone yesterday who said, oh, I would have never signed this if I would have known it actually does way more than restore Roe v. Wade. Another pastor said, oh, I would have never signed that if I would have known that this is actually a woman, children petition. And so you get stories like this all across the state where these radical Dakotans for Health group paid circulators from a lot of them out of state putting this on the ballot. And so we actually at Life Defense Fund, you can go there at lifedefensefund.com, are fighting this in the courts as well right now.
So is there any recourse for these citizens who were lied to, who were deceived into signing a petition that is not what they thought it was when they signed it? Or is it just now that their name is on it, it is what it is?
Yeah, unfortunately, right now, actually, the legislator actually passed a bill here that said you can actually take your name off if you know you were deceived and lied to. However, at this point, it's already going onto the ballot here soon. But we're at Life Defense Fund are fighting in the court saying this amendment should not actually be on the ballot. And if it is on the ballot, we are asking the court, because they have lied and deceived to get those signatures, that they would not count this measure on the ballot at all.
Yeah, what a horrifying precedent this sets if it is allowed to move forward. I assess the precedent that anyone can lie on an amendment, just gather a bunch of signatures saying this is all about wishing your grandma a happy birthday amendment. Petition, sign this petition where it may be horrible. I mean, this is a very dangerous path to go down if this petition is allowed to stand, wouldn't you say?
Yes. And I'll say two things, Jody. Number one, Americans, there's 73% of them who said, we do not actually want abortion after even 15 weeks. And so even the majority of Americans think this is too radical and too far. South Dakotans think this is radical and too far, and they've been lied and deceived. Now, I also want to mention that if this goes in our state constitution, if it passes, let's say November, this means that we can't just go back and tweak things or make it a little better. We can't tweak anything. We can't say, okay, let's add at least protections for women and for children. Let's add some conscious protections for nurses and doctors. We can't even do that. We'd actually have to go back through this entire process to even get this thing annulled altogether. It is a horrible, radical, awful abortion up to birth amendment that we just cannot see in our state. And we're fighting very hard to make sure everyone knows the truth. They get out there to vote November 5th. They donate to Life Defense Fund because we need all the ammunition we can get to stop this thing because it's far too radical and it puts women and babies in danger. And let me just add one more thing. Babies can feel pain up to, you know, early as 12 weeks, if not sooner. So this is something that's horrifyingly painful for children, and not only children, but women who go through this. Now, even under this, I was pregnant with my son, and I could have easily, under this petition slash a ballot measure, could have easily justified an abortion just based off of what this petition has in here. So this is a not good measure. It's something that we do not want in South Dakota. It does not represent our values and is against life and protections for mothers.
Okay, so how, back to the amendment itself, how does Amendment G repeal health and safety standards?
Yeah, so a couple things. So health and safety standards for women, you don't have to be a doctor or a licensed medical practitioner to even give an abortion, which means really anyone can give an abortion, which is horrifying. Number two, we have people here have inspections to make sure our facility is clean, it's up to standards. That rids all of those protections and those standards that we have here in South Dakota. So that means all of those things would go away, and there's no accountability here for women's safety or protection while getting an abortion.
Wow. So how can viewers and listeners help? You help the cause and come on board to help South Dakota.
Yes, I would just say, please go to lifedefensefund.com and fight the fight with us. Please donate. Please give your time. Please spread the word. We need all the help we can get because this is such a radical amendment, such a radical measure that we've seen passed in states like Ohio and Kansas. And we don't want to be one of those states. And we have a very good chance here of winning, but we need Americans to step in and to help. We need South Dakotans to vote the right way. We need people to know the truth of how this even got on there and how we can, what we can do and how we can fight against this. So thank you so much.
Caroline Woods from Life Defense Fund, thank you so much for joining us today on Washington Watch, and thank you for standing in the gap for all of us. We appreciate it. Keep the torch ablaze, and we'll certainly keep a pulse on what's happening there as well. All right, friends, continuing the conversation on the life issue, this week, two women in Texas filed federal complaints against hospitals, and they were claiming that the hospitals denied them abortions for ectopic pregnancies. And now, ever since the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, the abortion industry, quite frankly, has worked overtime to distort the medical definition of abortion. They do this by blurring the lines between intentional killing of a child in an abortion and versus the tragic unintended death of a child, be it through a miscarriage or ectopic pregnancy or whatever. Well, joining me now to help clear up these myths is Dr. Donna Harrison. She's a board-certified OBGYN who is presently CEO of the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists. Dr. Harrison, welcome to Washington Watch. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. And I just wanted to say I just stepped down as CEO, so I'm now the Director of Research for the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs, but still deeply in the battle, and especially with the misinformation that you just talked about. It is so
ridiculous.
All right,
let's talk about that misinformation. What is it? We've got to know the difference between abortions and unintended consequences of the death of a baby.
Yeah, it's very easy. An abortion, an elective abortion, is a procedure done with the purpose of making sure that baby, that living, healthy baby, comes out dead. That's what an abortion is, and that's been testified to by abortionists before the Supreme Court. The purpose of an elective abortion is to ensure that that human being dies before it comes out. Now, an ectopic pregnancy is completely different, and even Planned Parenthood had on their website before Dobbs the explanation that an ectopic pregnancy treatment is completely different than an abortion. In an ectopic pregnancy, what the human being has planted in the woman's tube. And most of the time, like 95% of the time, there isn't even a living baby there. There isn't a living fetus there because of all the things that have to happen in the tube. Some of them don't happen, and then the baby doesn't develop. So 95% of the time there isn't a living baby there, but 5% of the time there is. And in those cases, we wish that we had some other technology to transplant the baby or do something to make the baby live, but the fact is we don't. And so if you don't separate the mom and that baby, she'll die. And they'll both die, actually. So this is a life-saving procedure. When you treat an ectopic pregnancy, it is a life-saving procedure. The purpose isn't to kill the baby. The purpose is to save the mom's life, because if she dies, they both die.
Okay,
so
great
point.
It's
completely different.
Yeah, okay. So, with that, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, but the abortion lobby is trying to muddy the water on all these definitions. And I think to some degree they've been successful at this, because I find even pro-life people are not aware of what we're really talking about with all of this. So tell us why the existing so-called life of the mother exception language is so misleading.
Well, it's not misleading at all. In fact, to save the mom's life, it's a judgment that OB-GYNs make every day. If your doctor can't tell when you're in a life-threatening situation, you need another doctor. And if your doctor can't tell the difference between a dead baby, like a miscarriage, and a living baby, like a healthy pregnancy that someone wants to make sure dies, then you also need another doctor. So when we have a baby that's died and you take the baby out, that is not an elective abortion. And when you have an ectopic pregnancy or another situation that threatens the mother's life and you have to separate that mom and baby, even knowing that the baby won't live, that is not an abortion. And there are no states in the entire country which forbid the treatment, life-saving treatment for the mom. This is all blinding snow because the abortion industry is afraid of the actual definition of abortion, which is the purpose of an abortion is to make sure a perfectly healthy baby comes out dead. And that's something
exactly
that people have to understand.
That's what people have to understand, and that's why so much deception and mud is thrown into the water to eliminate the clarity of what we're talking about here and what's at stake with an abortion. And the science shows it very clearly as well. All right, so why should Americans be against these exceptions? I use this word loosely because I'm not sure exactly the best terminology to put this out here, but exceptions to pro-life protections for the unborn, why should we be against that? I'm assuming because of what you just said. It's black and white.
I think we need to be black and white in our laws. And the laws across the country, every single law across the country that has any kind of limitation on elective abortion says exquisitely clearly, this does not apply to ectopic pregnancies. This does not apply to when the baby's already died. This does not apply to situations where the mother's life is threatened. And you can't be clearer. The thing is, people aren't reading their laws, and the abortion industry is trying everything to make sure that nobody actually reads the law. And this is what's very the thing that we have to do is get people to understand what their law actually says, word for word, and then the blinding snow will disappear, because the abortion industry cannot provide even one example of any law in any state that forbids life-saving treatment for the mother, or forbids ectopic pregnancy treatment, or forbids treatment of miscarriages. It doesn't exist. This is all blinding snow by the abortion industry.
Dr. Donna Harrison, thank you for being such a clear voice on this issue. That message has to get out. It has to get out. And thank you for doing an incredible job. Thank you for joining us today on Washington Watch. All right, friends, that's all the time we have today. Thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to being with you again tomorrow. God bless. We'll see you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.